National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is the mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones that we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, February 3rd, 1946, we present the 12th in the distinguished new NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today,
in this day of synthetics, this age of resin,
what is the future of plastic?
This is Robert St. John in New York. If you take your dictionary's word for it, plastics are as old as the universe and as abundant as mud, as common as lard. For you see, by the dictionary's definition, mud and lard are plastics. A plastic is any material that can be molded and shaped. An important imagination-stirring new industry has risen to take a place in our future. Its raw materials not mud or lard, but organic substances. Its products molded and shaped, but with heat and under pressure. And the end result is a plastic.
This is Robert McCormick. And down in Washington, down in our nation's capital, government planners have a hopeful eye on the plastics industry. It offers innovations most important to the country's well-being. In refrigeration, domestic appliances, radio, in houseware, in apparel, in transportation, in almost everything. And it means jobs, thousands of jobs.
From New York, two leaders who are planning our plastic future will report to the National Hour today. They are Egmont Ahrens, well known as an industrial designer, and William T. Cruz, Executive Vice President of the Society of the Plastics Industry. It seems there's a little of the ludicrous in all the great scientific discoveries of the ages. There was Archimedes leaping from his bath with the theory of specific gravity and Newton cracked on the head by an apple. Well, here's how plastics came into our lives. The year is 1868 and the sound is, well, let's call it familiar.
Mm-hmm. Very good, Mr. Hyatt. Behaves very much as does the ivory billiard ball.
Well, if you'd like to test it further, you'll find it has most all the properties of ivory.
Very interesting. Is this material of yours expensive?
A good deal cheaper than ivory, you may be sure.
How is it produced?
It's a mixture of cellulose, which is produced from cotton linters, nitric acid, and camphor.
And what do you call this material, Mr. Hyatt?
Well, I've given it the name of celluloid.
Celluloid, the first commercially accepted plastic. And celluloid gave the fashionable 19th century gentleman a collar, cuffs, and a washable shirt front. To bring our plastic age a step closer, it took an Asiatic insect, the lac bug. In 1895, it was discovered that this insect produced a shellac, which could be put to use, and it was put to use.
This is Victor Record, number 46629. You will now hear, in my Merry Oldsmobile, sung by Ada Jones and Billy Murray.
Yes, shellac brought the phonograph record. A billiard ball started it rolling, a resin-making insect kept it moving, and by 1909, a noted Belgian chemist produced a resin that could be cast to desired form, as well as compounds that could be molded under heat and pressure. Since then, plastics have come a long way, all the way from celluloid to, well, say, to polyamides. That should interest you, lady.
Me? Why?
Because polyamides are nylon to you.
Down in Washington, the records are filled with the accomplishments of the plastic industry during the war. And when the citations for important war services are passed out, the scientists, the plastic chemists and designers should get a good share of them. One medal certainly for their answer to this problem. The problem was first posed by a tragic incident which occurred in Germany. American officers looked over the bomb tank in which one of our generals had died.
That's a bitter pill, all right. It's one of our own planes that got him.
But how could it have happened, sir? That's what I can't understand. The identification flag was on the general's tank. How could they have made that mistake?
Well, it couldn't be helped. I've seen the pilot's report. He couldn't recognize the identification. The reflection of the sun washed out the flag color.
Can't something be done, Major? This just can't happen again.
It did not happen again, because the plastic scientists did lick the problem. They developed a synthetic fabric whose color stood out boldly in spite of sun reflections. From the skies above the battle areas, American pilots now found they were able to distinguish quite clearly between friend and foe. An unofficial citation, too, for the scientists who saved thousands of lives in situations such as this. It's night on a South Pacific island, and an anti-aircraft gun crew waits tensely for the signal from the fighter planes that are roaring in.
Let's see some lights up there, chum. Let's see your colors.
Yeah, getting pretty close. Wouldn't like the idea of shooting down one of our own, but I'm sure.
Yeah. They got to remember their recognition lights, or else how are we to know that they ain't enemy planes?
Oop, there's the lights. Relax, children.
Hey, wait. Those signal lights are the wrong color.
Yeah, those are not our planes. They're trying to put one over on us. Get them!
Battery, fire!
Throughout the war, the Japanese tried and failed to reproduce the colored plastic lenses of recognition lights used by our planes. American plastic development always kept the step ahead. And another citation to the men who helped make possible one of the revolutionary weapons of the war, the proximity shell. With a radar device molded into the plastic nose of the shell, it did not have to hit its target. It had only to get near it. Now, here's a roll call of other wartime uses of plastics, and as an introduction, a fanfare on a bugle made entirely of plastic.
Inner soles for jungle boots.
Goggles. Assault boats, life raft, fuel cells, hand grenades, medical kit.
All plastic binoculars, gears, bearings.
Antennae masks, salt water purification stills.
Resin-bounded plywood for PT boats and mosquito bombers.
A plastic lung to replace the heavy iron lung.
This is Robert St. John again. We've looked over our plastic past, and now we're going to take a glimpse of the plastic future. First, let's study an exhibit marked, What's Wrong with This Scene? This is the 1950 home of Mr. and Mrs. Arthur M. Jones Smith. There's nothing unusual about the house, two stories, three bedrooms, two baths, but it was molded in one piece and cost $200, exclusive of the lot, of course. Mary Jones Smith has come into the acrylic living room to find her husband contentedly puffing on his vinylite pipe filled with achromatic ethyl cellulose. Now there's a sudden clatter on the roof.
Heavens, Arthur, did you hear that?
Nothing to get excited about, dear. Just our daughter. You know how she handles the helicopter. She never lands in the garage the first time. But I do wish she would quit hitting the roof.
Any damage done?
Oh, golly, no. The plane wings are double laminated framisan acetate. Can't hurt them.
But what about the roof?
Ethyl sansifrate. Can't even dent it.
Oh, yes. I always forget.
What's Junior doing?
Oh, nothing much. He's got his axe, pretending he's chopping down the pillars on the front porch.
I remember when I was a kid, I did that. That was before cordisec laminate. And I did cut the porch pillar down. Funny old days.
Uh-huh. Remember how mad you used to get at me when I dented the fenders on our car?
Yes, yes. You know, if Framus said that carbobutyl hadn't come along, I'd still be having to pay to have the fender straightened out.
You know, Arthur...
Yeah?
I don't want you to think I'm silly, but I sort of wish sometimes that something would break once in a while, or wear out.
Oh, my sweet little old-fashioned girl.
No, really. I always rather enjoyed breaking a dish when I got angry.
Well, I'll get you some dishes made of Srensich chloride. They bounce.
Oh, but please, don't you think I could have just one pair of silk hose just to wear around the house? Oh, they're so cute when they get run.
My sentimental little sweetheart. What are we having for supper, huh?
Styrene copolymers with Creole sauce.
Oh.
Cellulate acetate butyrate with some lovely drawn vanilladine butter.
Ah, swell. You know, that reminds me of the guy who said to his wife, "Where's the Framasan Brinston, honey?" And his wife said, "Just where you left it, dear. In the Connors Treg Malsatan."
Oh, Arthur.
That's a plastic age joke, son. You won't catch it until a plastic age sets in, and it never will, not that plastic age.
You said we were supposed to pick out what was wrong with that scene, Mr. St. John. What was wrong with it?
Well, just about everything. In that scene were incorporated many of the plastic fairy tales that make plastic manufacturers swear into their non-plastic beards. Tales that impute to plastics qualities that are both fantastic and incredible.
But the plastics I've seen are wonderful.
Oh, yes, indeed they are. But these streamlined dreams we've had, they won't be realized for decades, if forever.
Won't we have plastic automobiles?
Oh, there'll be more and more plastic materials in cars as time goes on. You know, the first cars had only celluloid side curtains. Then before the war, there were about 6 pounds of plastic material in a car. There will probably be more plastics than that in the new models.
But no dent-proof bodies?
Well, not for quite some time, according to the plastic industry itself. Bodies for station wagons, yes. That is being considered.
What about those molded houses? They sound swell to me.
Well, at present, they've managed to mold a 17-foot boat with low-pressure molding process, but it'll be quite a time before it will be possible to mold any large part of a house.
You're going to tell me we won't even be able to get nylon stockings.
No, you'll get your nylons, lady, or maybe even something better.
But I'll tell you one thing. I don't think I'd like plastic meals.
Mister, I can tell you with authority that even the most ardent plastics enthusiasts wouldn't look at a synthetic steak.
This is McCormick again. The National Hour has tried to burst a plastic dream bubble. But right now, the industry is setting realistic, attainable goals and going about reaching them in sure, practical ways. One of the foremost industrial designers making use of new plastic materials and processes is Mr. Egmont Ahrens. He's just returned from Chicago, having attended the first annual conference of the Low Pressure Industries Division of the Society of Plastic Industry. As with all industries, the plastic industry is paced and challenged by the demands of the designers. And designers are spurred by the technical advances made in their materials. Mr. Ahrens has told the plastic industry what the designers need, and he has learned what the designers may expect. And here he is now to report to the National Hour, Mr. Egmont Ahrens.
The exhibition in Chicago was significant because in a certain sense we saw there the birth of a new industry. Or perhaps I had better say the development of new industrial techniques which will revolutionize many other industries. You will perhaps understand how important this is if you will go back with me a few years in the cement industry. Before the development of steel reinforcing, cement was a material out of which you could make such small things as bricks, but larger structures made of cement tended to crack up and disintegrate. But with steel added, cement became reinforced concrete, which is something else again, and we got not only smooth roadways, but gigantic concrete structures like the mighty Bonneville Power Dam. Now, just as the construction engineers added steel reinforcement to cement, so now plastics engineers have added fiber reinforcement to the plastic resins, with the result that instead of being confined to making only small moldings, like beetleware cups or portable radio cabinets, it is now possible to make large area moldings, such as aeroplane fuselages, automobile bodies, and boat hulls. And in my opinion, the new use, these new use of plastics will use tons instead of pounds of the resins. The wonderful thing about these new plastic materials is that they can be contour molded. That is, in contrast to the flat laminates like plywood, they can be molded into beautiful rounded shapes such as you see in automobile bodies and airplanes. In a word, they can be streamlined. And that particularly is why I, as an industrial designer, am so interested in this this material. In fact, this is the kind of material that an industrial designer can go to town on. In our exhibit in Chicago, we had four molded boats on exhibition. The largest of these was 17 feet long, and there's no reason why 30, 40, and even 50-foot boats cannot be built by the same techniques. They will have hulls that are in one solid piece, and they will be seamless, leak-proof, moisture-proof, worm-proof, rot-proof. In a word, the leaky boat is a thing of the past. Now, I would like to rid your mind of one misconception. When we talk about plastic boats, remember, they will look on the outside just like wooden boats. They will be opaque, not transparent like Lucite. Don't be like the lady who said to me ecstatically the other day, "Plastic boats? How wonderful. Now we can look right down and see the fishes."
This is Robert St. John again. A little earlier, we had a glimpse of the future, as it most certainly will not be. Now let's visit some factories where they make plastics and see what's going on.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm going along, if you don't mind.
Well, I don't believe we have met. Your name is...
Joe Mussels.
And what do you do, Joe?
Well, I don't believe things. When somebody tells me something is unbreakable, I break it.
Well, then come along by all means. And here's something to start with, an unbreakable drinking cup.
What's it made of?
Well, there's nylon in it.
Now, do I have to break it with my hands?
Suit yourself. It's a freestyle event.
Okay, watch me. I'll just put a little pressure on it. Hey, you can't get no grip on it. You go ahead. I'll catch up with you.
All right. We'll look in first on experiments that are going on with plastics in apparel. What are you working on, sir?
Testing these shoe caps. They're for children's shoes. You know how they scuff through the toes.
Yes, children have been doing it for centuries.
Well, they won't with these vinyl toe caps. Caps will outlast several pairs of shoes.
You don't know my kids.
You don't know vinyl.
Come along, Joe, come along. I'm going over here where this fellow is turning a shower of water on what looks like a sheet of cellophane.
Well, it's a vinyl plastic material. It'll be used in raincoats and hoods and umbrellas and things such as that.
That's why it's being tested underwater, I suppose.
That's right. I'm soaking it under the shower for an hour. Then I'll take it out in the hot sun for an hour.
Yeah, it'll crack.
Yeah, hasn't yet.
Oh, by the way, this is Joe Mussels. He breaks things.
Well, not professionally, mind you. Just one of me social graces. I specialize in tearing telephone directories.
Would you like to tear this sheet of vinyl plastic, Joe?
Now, this is me dish.
All right. Here you are. Now, this sheet of vinyl plastic has been in the water over 50 times and has dried out in the sun the same number of times. Now, the only noticeable effect is that it's a little stiffer than when we started with the test. Now, tear it, starting in the center, of course.
Well, I hate to do it. It's nice-looking stuff.
Don't spare it.
Hey, it stretches. I can't tear it because it stretches. What good is stuff like this if it'll get all out of shape?
Watch it. And you'll see what is meant by plastic memory.
Hey, it's getting back like it was.
Well, what is this plastic memory?
Well, it's a strange characteristic many plastics have. They can be pressed, pulled, twisted out of shape, but after a time they resume their normal shape.
What good is that?
Perhaps someday the knees of your trousers will have plastic memories.
And that's another prophecy to remember. Well, how are you doing, Joe?
Boy, this is tough.
Here, Joe, tear a telephone directory and revive your morale.
This is Robert McCormick again. Washington these days is looking to a relative, at least a first cousin, to the plastics industry for the answer to one of the nation's most pressing problems. The men who are tackling the housing problem are wondering if plywood bonded with plastics might not, in a measure, provide a solution. Now, let's pay a hypothetical visit to that branch of the plastics industry. Is that plywood you're sawing?
Uh-huh.
And when you're finished sawing?
It's going to be the wall of that house.
Will it stand the gas?
Yeah, it ought to. What we didn't find out about making plywood during the war isn't worth knowing.
But won't the layers separate when the plywood gets damp?
No, not with the adhesives we have now. Moisture-proof, boil-proof, fungus-proof, everything-proof. And plywood boards don't have to be nailed. In fact, the adhesives we have now hold even more securely than nails and screws.
Well, perhaps then plywood and plastics are going to come forward as the long-sought solution to our housing problem. At any rate, that's the sort of challenge these young plastic industries like to accept.
This is Robert St. John. Yes, every day the plastic people are bringing forward innumerable new materials. Materials with strange properties, some yet to be put to work at the right job. Plastics, a newcomer to modern industry, has as its problem not to prove its worth, but rather to find the jobs in which plastics can serve better and more efficiently than other materials. A spokesman for the plastic industries who can supply us with the answer to our National Hour question, the question of what we can expect from plastics in the next few years, he's here with us now. He is the Executive Vice President of the Society of the Plastics Industry, Mr. William T. Cruz. Mr. Cruz.
While plastics may have been considered the industrial glamour girl of the 30s, when World War II began, they took their position along with steel, copper, and aluminum as war materials. Plastics became a component of every piece of our armed forces equipment, which either shot, flew, or floated. Plastics, like other industrial materials, must be applied according to the suitability of their properties for a particular article. An engineer would not consider making an aeroplane of cast iron, and so a plastic must be selected which will withstand the conditions under which it must operate. Plastics are not miracle materials. Like other basic products, they must be utilized in accordance with what you are trying to achieve. To illustrate, phenolic plastics, which are generally dark in color, wouldn't do for aircraft windows. The industry recognizes the need for coordinating technical information on plastics and the necessity of having this information in the hands of engineers and designers whose responsibility it is to design consumers' products. In a comprehensive program, the industry, through the Society of the Plastics Industry, has a technical and engineering committee which is systematically classifying and coordinating available engineering data on plastics. In addition, to encourage their correct application and use, an informative labeling program has been undertaken. This program is designed to encourage plastic manufacturers to label their products so that the ultimate user will know what to expect of them and how to use them. We in the plastics industry have high hopes for the future of plastics. We prefer to be realistic regarding these possibilities. If you attend the first National Plastics Exhibition at Grand Central Palace in New York in April, you will not see plastic locomotives or plastic steam boilers, but you will see plastic radios, plastic toiletware, plastics office appliances, and innumerable applications of plastics for refrigerators, for automobiles, and for airplanes. The 23 various types of plastic materials, each in its own way, is capable of doing a job for the American consumer. Plastics can make this a better world for you. They are helping to make it a better world today.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz.
Oh, Mr. St. John.
Yes?
You remember my wife and me.
Well, of course, you were the people in our What's Wrong With This Scene exhibit.
Uh-huh. We've been wondering just when the plastic age is really going to begin.
Yeah, when do we start getting plastics to use?
Well, I guess that it's already begun for you.
Oh.
Let's see now. Let's take a look at your normal day and see if the plastic age has begun for you. How does your day usually start?
Same as yours does.
Well, then it begins like this. You take it from here.
Time to get up. Turn off the clock, will you?
All right.
The case of the clock is made of urea formaldehyde.
Hand me my robe, will you, dear?
The robe is rayon cellulose acetate.
Yeah.
You take your shower first. I don't feel right until my teeth are brushed.
Shower curtain, vinyl. Arthur takes the soap from a cellulose nitrate soap dish. Mary's robe and the soap dish, you see, are sisters under the surface. And there's Mary brushing her teeth. The toothbrush has an acrylic handle and nylon bristles.
I'll get it, Arthur.
On the way to the phone, Mary turns a doorknob of acetate butyrate before she picks up the phenolic telephone casing.
It was the Millers. They want to play bridge tonight. Get a new deck of cards today, will you? Did you hear me?
I can't hear you. I'm shaving.
The handle of Arthur's electric razor is urea formaldehyde. The cards he will buy will be a plastic, too. New washable acetate. And now to breakfast.
Egg's about ready, Arthur.
I'll be right with you. I'm putting on my socks now.
And Arthur snaps on his garters. Cellulose acetate again, this time in the catches. The non-heating conducting handle of Mary's skillet is heat-resistant phenolic. And there's Mary getting her face ready to display across the breakfast table. Lipstick in a urea formaldehyde holder.
Wait a minute, Mr. St. John. I think I've got the idea now. You're saying that the plastic age isn't just around the corner.
That's right, Arthur. The plastic age arrived yesterday.
Our subject for the National Hour today has been the future of plastics, and this is what we have learned.
Generally speaking, the plastics industry has an exceedingly bright future. Wartime pressures and demands speeded up general recognition of this fact. Plastics can be put to many and varied uses, often proving superior to materials previously considered irreplaceable. Research and experimentation are now being directed toward peacetime applications, and many new important uses are assured. Because plastics is a subject that seems to encourage the wildest of dreams, people may expect the impossible from the resin synthetics, and that is the danger feared by the industry itself. Its leaders say many of the things expected of plastics are impossible, by which they mean, of course, it will take a few more years to do the impossible.
On the subject of plastics, then, our documentary is closed.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to be with us again next Sunday when our subject will be, Is Inflation Here to Stay?
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York, we have brought you the 12th in the distinguished new series on national problems and current affairs. Our speakers today were Egmont Ahrens and William T. Cruz. Robert St. John was your narrator, with Robert McCormick reporting today from New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.